morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Wednesday, March 18th, 2009. And this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Air Cascadia has a special feature today, an interview with Vandana Shiva.
Portland's East Side business leaders aren't sold on the Rose Quarter sports spectacle.
And a provision that would have restricted companies receiving federal government bailout money and from paying bonuses was quietly stripped from a bill just last month.
Portland area weather, mostly cloudy in the north, highs around 50. Tonight, overcast and wet, temperatures in the mid-30s to low 40s, and then tomorrow, more of the same.
First up, regional news from around Cascadia. Eastside business leaders are not enthused with the glorious Rose Quarter Baseball Stadium. The city's grand plan to build a sports complex may excite sports fans, but it's proving a tough sell to the Eastside District. One reason is that they weren't consulted on the complicated deal, even though it's going to take $18.5 million of their urban renewal money. Another reason is that a baseball stadium doesn't fit into the eight-year-old plan that the city had for the quarter.
Oregon has a good idea. Scrap steel into inexpensive housing. Here's the deal. Local scrap metal company Metro Metals Northwest takes junked cars, crushes them, then breaks them up in a massive chipper. The glass and plastic are also recycled. Rob Boydston of Miranda Homes says recycled steel is much more affordable than raw steel, which must be mined, usually at huge cost to the environment. What's not to like?
Exactly, Liam, because here we are with dwindling forests, logging companies still clamoring to be allowed to clear-cut more and more and more acres, even in national forests. And we have thousands upon thousands of cars piling up. Why not use the cars to build housing? Portland transportation planners are holding an open house today to discuss the new pedestrian bridge that will cross over Interstate 5 underneath the Portland Aerial Tram. Neighborhood activists in the Lair Hill area west of I-5 have long sought the Gibbs Street Pedestrian Bridge project. It's going to connect that area to the emerging South Waterfront area and the Willamette River.
Portland's bike registry plan is probably dead. A proposed bill requiring all bicycles on the road to be registered with a $54 licensing fee every 2 years is by all reasonable measures dead. Now prepare for a fierce debate on making the so-called Idaho stop legal for cyclists.
If a stagnant housing market is causing the likes of Boise Cascade to lay off workers another 30 just yesterday, why? Why? Is the timber industry still suing to protect its right to rape the earth? All you can do is keep fighting them in court. Yesterday, conservation groups added new endangered species claims to their lawsuit against the U.S. Bureau of Land Management's plans to boost logging in western Oregon.
In California, a Riverside County town is going green to combat foreclosure blight. A contractor has been hired to spray paint lawn bald spots in Paris. Contractor Dave Milligan uses an environmentally friendly dye that lasts up to 6 months and is harmless to people and pets. The city hopes the foreclosed properties are bought and occupied before the lawn needs a touch-up.
See, this is a good thing because it's environmentally safe paint that they're using to spray the lawns. And now we go to our feature today on Air Cascadia. Last month, the Organicology Conference brought together people from all across the nation and indeed across the world to talk, listen, and learn from one another and from the presenters. The featured speaker was physicist, seed activist, and ardent opponent of the crimes of globalization, Vandana Shiva. I'm speaking with Vandana Shiva at the Organicology Conference in Portland, Oregon, and I just have a few questions.
Well, until the 1980s, the Indian seed supply was in the hands of Indian farmers or public breeding institutions. 80% was the farmer's own seed. Under pressure of the World Bank and later under pressure of WTO, the Indian seed supply was opened up to global corporations. The first seed that was brought in to the country was hybrid sunflower by Cargill, and we were forced to allow it to enter through U.S. trade pressure, where the U.S. trade representative has said, crowbar by crowbar, we're going to open up your economy for our companies. And when the hybrid sunflower seed failed badly, farmers lost their crop, the farmers said, crowbar by crowbar, we will pack up your companies and send them back home. And they physically dismantled Cargill's plant in a major action, to which Cargill responded and said, the farmers are stupid because we bring seeds that prevent the bees from usurping the pollen, because in hybridization you don't allow open pollination through pollinators. You ensure that you do the physical breeding by hand in order to have hybrid vigor, but also in the process you lose the renewability of seed because the second generation does not breed true.
And you talked also, I was very moved by the parallel you drew between freedom and seed, and you have to have seeds. You have to be free to save seeds, you have to be free to plant seeds, and you have to be free to deal with what you grow, not just the yield.
Very quietly and very quickly, I think humanity is losing its freedom. Freedom to choose the food you will eat. But you cannot choose the food you will eat unless you have the freedom to save the seed, to grow the food you will eat. Increasingly, corporations are pushing GMOs that nobody wants. Every time a referendum is done anywhere in the world, people say no to genetically modified crops. But they are becoming a forced part of the human diet by taking over the seed supply and preventing farmers from having their own seed. That is why, for me, freedom is built into the seed. If we are free to save seeds, if we are free to grow seeds, we will be able to be free to have our food freedom, to choose the food we will eat and say no in a serious way to toxic food, to genetically engineered food.
And finally, my last question, what do you think it would take in America, in the West, to motivate farmers to overcome fear and really stand up to companies like Monsanto and Cargill?
I think the first thing is American people have shown that they can overcome fear. After all, they brought Obama to power on the basis of a huge popular mobilization. It isn't Obama who won. It's the people of America who made him win. And the same energy and the same confidence and the same fearlessness that was mobilized for one individual should surely be mobilized to make sure the farmers and the American public reclaim their freedom for food. And that has to be done by ensuring that farmers are able to say no to the Monsantos and the police states that they are creating in rural America, threatening farmers, suing farmers. I think if farmers across the board in the U.S. did what we do, a seed satyagraha, like Gandhi salt satyagraha, and said, we will not grow your seed, we will not obey your patent law, we do not want your genetically modified seed. But they can only say that if, meantime, there is an organic seed supply being built up. And the two have to go hand in hand. The positive constructive action of creating seed banks, community seed banks of open seeds, open pollinated seeds, and saying no to non-renewable seed, contaminated seed, genetically modified seed. It's totally doable. And like I said, if all of that energy could help Obama win, surely that energy can help Monsanto lose.
Thank you so much, listeners. Of course, this is Vandana Shiva speaking with me. You heard it. I will leave it. So let's go out and do it.
While the rest of the country gears up to repair failing infrastructure in public spaces and actually build things, what's Oregon doing with its stimulus money? We're cutting down more trees in the summer when the fire danger is highest, using huge sparking machinery. When President Obama encouraged governors to hurry up and begin building bridges and schools to revive the economy, he probably wasn't thinking Lincoln logs.
There are currently some 107 known government classifications that stand between we the people and how they make the sausage. Yesterday, the House voted to simplify the way the federal government handles information with the goal of making documents more available to the public. Ultimately, the legislation would maximize public access to government info. The legislation itself, however, is so complicated we weren't able to get it onto Air Cascadia too long.
A third Winter Soldier conference unfolded, this time overseas. In the lead-up to NATO's 60th summit next month in Strasbourg, Germany, Winter Soldier Europe took place in nearby Freiburg. Iraq and Afghanistan veterans from Germany, the UK, and the US testified, revealing the impact of the occupations on civilians and service members alike.
All across the world, people, all across the world. Well, this week has been the week that AIG and the American people will never forget. KBOO's Spencer Raymond joins us to talk about the AIG scandal, what it's doing to the Obama administration's image and its efforts to get the country back on track. There have been some very interesting twists and turns. Spencer, what do you make of it?
Hi, good morning, Chris. Yeah, you know, it's interesting when we talk about political capital here. I mean, that was really a term coined by George Bush back after he won re-election in 2004. How much political capital does the president have post-election to really do whatever they want, both from a policy standpoint and talking to the American people and convincing Congress to go along with them, which now isn't as big of a deal because, as we know, Congress is controlled, both houses are controlled by Democrats. But a lot of people are saying this week, especially after what we know now about AIG was made public, that Obama's political capital is basically spent. And, you know, think about all the money that he's spent with the bailouts, with helping out these banks that weren't very popular, necessary but not very popular when he did that. He used up his political capital. And now with these mistakes being made, look, government money was going to executive bonuses, was going to, you know, companies that were part of AIG that AIG just paid out. People are starting to question, are these bailouts, are these policies by the Obama White House really necessary? And now that he's into his presidency a few months, people are not going to take what he says as the gospel anymore, like they may have a month ago. They're going to start criticizing him more, like I said, because that political capital is waning.
And one of the things that came out just yesterday, this new revelation that there was a provision that would have in legislation that a month ago that would have restricted companies receiving federal bailout aid from paying bonuses. This legislation was stripped from a bill last month. The measure was introduced by Ron Wyden. It was removed by negotiators in a late-night closed-door meeting. Senators agreed to limit executive compensation but decided to forego barring excessive bonuses. This is just a month ago. This has just hit the fan this morning, and it's not going to help matters as far as selling the idea that we have to continue to prop up AIG.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, there's a lot of, and we've said this before, there's a lot of little intricacies in how these bailouts work. I mean, how do you give a company money to say, here, we're giving you this money so you can continue functioning, when an inherent part of a bank functioning is paying their executives six-figure salaries? I mean, that kind of goes with the territory if you're talking about banks and if you're talking about helping them. So how I mean, can the federal government give bailout money with strings attached, saying you have to use this for operations, but you can't use it for, you know, salaries? Will banks want it then, and how complicated? I mean, you know, then you get into this whole legal language, and it becomes much, much, much more complicated than it already is right now.
Well, they're talking about if they can't get the money back straight up, they're talking about taxing it out of them, and we'll see how that's probably a dream, but we'll see how that plays out. Spencer, thank you so much. And of course, was KBOO Spencer Raymond joining us, as he does every weekday morning with DC Dirt. Thanks so much for that, Spencer.
And in D.C., today, the Senate confirmation hearings for former Washington Governor Gary Locke got underway. He faced mostly friendly questions at the hearing for nomination as Commerce Secretary. He's Obama's third nominee for the Commerce post.
And finally, this. You know what it's like when you go to the airport and you've got to take off your shoes and hand over your toothpaste and everything? Pete DeFazio, Oregon's own congressman, had it up to the gills and told airport security what he thought about the rather excessive measures that they were taking. He was apparently singled out for special search, quite unnecessarily. Now, of course, Roll Call has seized upon the story and is running full tilt with it. Good luck, Roll Call.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Wednesday, March 18th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints. An Iraq veteran talks about why he went AWOL and now plans to march on the Pentagon, and more on the police killing of Oscar Grant in Oakland.
I say we levitate the Pentagon. The time is right. Thanks for listening and have a good day.